Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host, joined by, we have the full crew here today, Cody. Hello, Cody.
Hey, Pat.
We're doing this one at a time. Bo, how are you doing out there?
Fantastic.
And Tracy Noble, how are you, Trace?
I'm fine. I'm a little tired today because it's Monday.
Yeah, sometimes that's the case. I feel it too. We got Karen and Matt in here too. So, Cody, what is the topic of today's podcast?
The three types of courage.
That's right. The three types of courage. You know, this podcast comes on the heels of our last one where Joel in our office talked about his trip from Cuba and coming here and the differences in culture. So courage is certainly something that is relevant in regard to that conversation. And that was special. That was really special. Mm-hmm. But this topic comes from a meeting I had recently. I was talking to a bunch of our consultants. We have 50 consultants around the world who do our work, a little plug for them. And we were just having a conversation about something, and the topic of courage came up. And in the midst of that conversation, it dawned on me that there's three kinds of courage. And that's what we want to share with you today and just talk about that. So that's what we're going to do. This is like brand new thoughts from us. Maybe somebody has already written a book about this. I don't know. But this is just something that occurred to me in a meeting, and we thought we'd share it with you.
It seems like it behooves me to ask the question, what are the three types of courage, Pat?
Well, thank you, Bo. But that is a great question. So the three types of courage, I think, are this. The first one is, we'll call it public courage, the willingness to stand up and make a public statement, even when you know there's risk involved. And somebody will say, nope, I will do that. I think this is right. I am going to stand up and make a stand. Okay, public courage. That's what we think about in history books and in society. The other kind of courage is one we've talked about on a podcast before, which is interpersonal courage, which is the courage to have a difficult conversation with a one or two people in a room where you're confronting them, and it might not be popular, it might not be well-liked in that moment. And then the third kind of courage, which I think kind of sets up the other two, is kind of self-courage, the willingness, the courage to confront yourself about what's true, even when that's difficult to face that. So those are the three different kinds of courage. And I wanted to have a conversation with you all about the fact that some people index higher on one versus the other and how they all fit together. So we're exploring this for the first time.
And this is one of my favorite things that you do, Pat, which we get to dive deeper into this content, is like we were in that meeting and you sort of flippantly talked about the, you know, like, hey, I think there might be three different types of courage. And I wrote it down on a little card that I have right in front of me at my desk. And the more that I've thought about it and self-reflected about which of those three do I find come most naturally to me and which do I shy away from or what circumstances have I done? It's like the self-reflection around this alone has been a gift to be able to say like, oh, it's really interesting. You think that the idea of courage, the concept of courage, like, oh, it's so simple. But even as you break it apart a little bit more, it can do a lot for whether you're a leader or a parent or a friend to say, hey, which of these things do I find comes more naturally to me? And sometimes I abdicate I refuse to do the other two.
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad to hear that.
That's interesting because when you said those three, the first thing that happened to me is I felt guilt about the one that was immediately lowest for me. Mm-hmm. That when you said interpersonal courage, public courage, and you know, like self-courage, I immediately was like, oh man, I thought I was doing okay, but there's one of them that I feel like immediately less courageous about.
Right. Mm-hmm. I have the same thought. And sometimes it's situationally that changes for me, but I think there's some that I struggle with more than others.
So Pat, I think it's interesting that you started at public and then the last one you listed was self. I'm wondering, can you have interpersonal and public courage without self-courage?
That was not the first place I was going to go because that would seem, so you went to the extreme, like could somebody not be willing to confront themselves, but be good at confronting others and making a stand in conversations and publicly? I think there would almost have to be some sort of disorder involved in that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like somebody who's like, I'll call you on stuff. I'll say, shout it to the world, but I don't have any problems. There might be some level of, I don't want to use the word lightly, but like a narcissism or a, what do you call it? When a person is like, gosh, yeah, pathology.
Delusional. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to use that lightly, because I would think that you would need to almost say, if I'm willing to do that with others, I better be able to do it myself. Mm-hmm. But maybe there's people that are like that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I will say is this, though. I had a friend recently or a while back say to me, he said, I don't have courage. But he didn't say it like, dang it, I wish I had more courage. He was kind of declaring it to be a permanent quality. And it was like, no. Courage is not something that is optional. It's not like, oh, it's like everybody is meant to be courageous. Now, granted, different people have different kinds of courage that comes most easily. And there's all kinds of factors in that. But the idea is all people living their best life are meant to have courage. And it's not something that we should just declare that we don't and live that way, because I don't think it's supposed to be optional.
Okay, so now as you're unpacking it, I'm realizing that maybe I had a misunderstanding about courage. So here's a question I don't know the answer to as I'm asking you, which is, what's the difference between risk tolerance and courage?
They're certainly related, but what is the risk? If we don't have courage, what is the risk that is overriding our willingness to take action? Mm-hmm. And I think usually, and we're thinking about this in real time, I think it's rejection. Mm-hmm. I think it's the concept of somebody is going to reject me either temporarily or over the long term or permanently. And I think most things come down to that when it comes to courage. And I guess rejection could be that I could get murdered for this, or I could get fired for this, or I could get uninvited or feel shamed for this. But I think more often than not, it's that idea of being rejected. Does that make sense?
Oh, it totally makes sense.
You know, there's something else I was thinking about when this came up. And that was that I read someplace recently that somebody said, when you're trying to get somebody, you're trying to get somebody to move or to change or to adopt something, we often tend to try to convince them through knowledge. And of course, knowledge also always has to be there. But what they said is we rarely understand that courage is even more important. I mean, if I'm trying to get somebody to change their behavior, to not do something that's not good for them, what we do is we try to make a case for it. We try to give them another case study and a case study. And oftentimes we're like, well, they're just not moving. Maybe I need more information. And this person, it was a priest and who's passed on, wrote, it said, often we don't understand that it's not that they don't know enough to do it. It's that they just don't have the courage to. And if we don't address that, we'll go blue in the face before we can get somebody to actually take a stand.
It's so interesting, Pat, as that relates to some of the leaders that we do organizational health with. That is very much that comes alive in those conversations. When you're having a conversation about, hey, the healthy versus smart. And if we focus on the healthy side, it's a maximizer of the smart side of our businesses. It really is not we're not winning the hearts and minds of those leaders by way of information. And in fact, many of them, we talk about this, it's not like we talk about the biases that they have against sort of embracing organizational health. And it does boil down to this idea that, well, what if I get embarrassed? Or what if I try this and it doesn't have the effect that I want? Mm-hmm. Or if I get behind sort of this model or methodology or leading, you know, into the healthy side of the equation, there's some level of risk that they're sort of internally wrestling with to say, could I be the champion of this type of work? And what are the consequences if it doesn't pan out the way I hope? And it's That level of courage to say, hey, we're going to focus on this side of the equation, the healthy side of the equation. And that does, it takes an immense amount of courage for a leader to say, this matters maybe even more than the other side of that coin.
I think 98% of our clients that we've worked with over the years would tell you that it was much more about courage than it was about knowledge. Now they'll say, wow, that's an interesting way to put organizational health or teamwork, the five dysfunctions of a team or any of those things. But more importantly, they'll say, I think I already knew that, or that makes sense to me and I could have figured that out. What I didn't have is the resolve to stand up and say, this is what we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does play out in that way. And there's, I will tell you, there's leaders I know who will stand up in front of their employee base and say, we have to work harder, or we have to care more about our customers, or we have to work as teams more and be more vulnerable and sacrificial. And they'll take a public stand on it, but then they won't hold their direct reports accountable in a conversation. Mm-hmm. Or there'll be some that will have the conversations with their peers, but then won't stand up in front of people and make it public. So it really does matter. The question then becomes, how does that third form, your self-courage, impact those things?
Yeah. And Pat, one of the interesting conversations out of this concept that you relayed to our PCs in that meeting, our consultants, was one of our consultants said, hey, I'm actually guilty of, in a sports setting where he wanted to hold one or two of the players accountable, instead of having the interpersonal courage to have a one-on-one conversation, he would guise it. He would like sort of do a public thing to the whole team. And right. So in other words, rather than having the courage to say, I'm going to have this uncomfortable conversation one-on-one, I'm going to do it publicly to the whole team. And so there are team members who are like, boy, looking around like, I thought I was doing well at that. And it caused all this confusion. And he said, I sort of used that as a way of saying I'm courageous when I really was lacking this interpersonal courage.
Yeah, it's so interesting because we tend to think that our lack of courage is probably public courage. And boy, there's so much of that in the world today, and we need more public courage. But if you do one without the other, you really need both. You know, when I say you have to have courage, you really need all three. If you're lacking any one of those three, it's going to create secondary problems, right? If you're not holding yourself accountable, in other words, you're not confronting your own issues, but you're confronting the publicly and interpersonally, people are going to think you're a hypocrite, or that you're, you know, like that there's a narcissism there. But if you confront yourself and you confront others, but then you're not willing to stand up and say that, people are just going to think, well, I guess you're too worried about your reputation. But then if you're willing to stand up and say that and not hold people accountable, gosh, maybe they'll think you're grandstanding. You're doing that just for like that you want to look like a person of courage, but you're really not. I don't know.
You know, what's interesting as we're having this conversation, and I don't get all of my wisdom from cartoon movies, but my kids, you know, when you're a parent and your kids watch the same movie for about a decade at a time, that's the only movie that they put on. It feels like that. My kids have been watching The Lion King, and it was interesting as we're having this conversation, there's this line in The Lion King where the Simba as a kid goes to the wastelands or the shadowlands or whatever to prove that he's courageous, when it was unnecessary. And then his dad is sort of having this conversation with him, and he says, well, you're brave. And the line that I thought was great, he says, I'm only brave when I have to be. And the idea of like there's a calculus that you do when we're talking about courage. Cause I love that the word brave and then the word bravado. Bravado is sort of like courage when it's unnecessary. You know, it's like, oh, why did you do that? It was unnecessary for you to get out and grandstand in front of that group. But courage is actually a very timely, hey, we need to push this relationship, or I need, obviously my wounds are affecting the people around me. I need to have the interpersonal courage to take a look inward. So I love the idea of saying like, we're not here to say more unnecessary courage. It's just the right amount of necessary, timely courage is really, really meaningful.
Yeah, that's so important. Karen just wrote something down, and that is it's when we don't want to do it. That's when it becomes courage. If it's like, ooh, yeah, I get to get up and do this, that might very well be ego and pride. But you know what I think is amazing to me is we talk about this, and I think this has taken a while for us to get into it because it's our first time, is how we grow up watching movie after movie after movie, and even friggin' cartoons. And I don't mean like The Lion King. I mean like even other cartoons where it was always somebody standing up and doing the right thing. And it could have been Leave It to Beaver. It could have been a Top Gun or whatever else. It could have been a big movie over the top. So we have example after example after example. And I think there's a small minority of people in the world who will actually, when that time comes, publicly stand up and say, you guys, this is wrong. We can't do this. And how can it be so popular in culture and magazines and movies and TV and so rare still in the world? It just fascinates me.
I think we all aspire. Don't you think we aspire to that as humans?
To be courageous?
Yes. I think that's why it's depicted that way.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I would think more people would do it in that moment. I mean, if you were to ask me, I would say 95% of the time when people are faced with the situation where they have to stand up and be courageous, I think 95% of the time they don't. Mm-hmm. So if they aspire to that, what do you think, Bo?
Well, I remember as a kid, you know, having these sort of daydreams about somebody needing to be rescued. You know, there's somebody who needs to be picked off the train tracks, or a car is coming and you grab a kid and get them out of the way. And movies are, and television shows are that way, right? That's heroic physical courage. And so often when the kind of courage you're talking about is actually way messier, because it involves relationships, it involves words, right? And so to take a stand, to say that something is wrong, you risk being misunderstood, you risk your words being spliced, right? You risk alienating somebody. And so, yes, I think that, man, I want that kind of courage that would do the right thing and say this is wrong. And in the moment when, especially for public courage, when it comes up, because of people's attention span is so short, you are always taking that risk, which you spoke to a few minutes ago, of being rejected, misunderstood, alienated because of a stand that you took or something that you chose to do.
Yeah. Right. Like in movies and TV, it's often very black and white or neat and tidy. It's like you do this or you do that, but there's a lot more nuance and a lot more messiness, a lot more ugliness that's less grand, but it's just grainier. I don't know if that's the right word.
Yeah. I also think, you know, it goes back to that risk conversation, because even as my kids are starting to watch movies, they've watched very few movies, but the idea, I often find myself telling my daughter, hey, don't worry, nothing bad is going to happen to the good guy, because they don't make a movie where Superman dies in the end, or, you know, like the good guy wins in the movie. And so there's this, you're sort of playing with a little bit of a safety net when you're looking at the movie. Whereas in real life, when there is actual risk, you don't know the ending of that movie. It doesn't always say that, like, the good guy comes out on top. Sometimes it's very costly to be courageous, and it doesn't make it any less the right thing to do, but it might cost you more than it looks like it costs you in the movies.
Ooh, that's a great point. I think because we grow up thinking courage is always rewarded in the moment, or at least by the end of the movie. So it's not more than 90 minutes, or if it's a show, it might be 50 minutes. And if it's a half hour show, it's 20 minutes. You're going to get rewarded eventually. And so when people go out and they see, I don't see the path to being rewarded for this,
right?
Maybe they don't do it, which is why we really remember the movies and the stories, especially the true ones, where they don't get rewarded. Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, can you think of like some of the, what movies were about courage that didn't get rewarded this side of heaven? Can you think of any? One is Braveheart. Braveheart.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was the first one that came to mind. Yeah.
You know, he didn't, like, if it's a Star Wars movie, they parade him down the middle and he gets crowned king and he gets to kiss Princess Leia and go, see, he won. But no, they ripped him apart and he was tortured. And I think that's why it's so powerful, because, you know, I watch all these superhero movies and you just go, okay, at the end, he's going to win. So how's this going to play out? But when you watch a story and there's not a guarantee of that, or even if it doesn't end that way, you admire that person even more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that other movie that came to mind for me was The Dark Knight, which is the middle of the three movies where Christian Bale is Batman. Mm-hmm. And spoiler alert, basically what he does is he takes the fall because it's the thing that he perceives as what the city needs, even though it's not necessarily what the city deserves. I might be getting that quote not exactly right, but he's then seen as the villain, even though he's actually the hero. And that was pretty sneaky
courageous.
That's what I
love about Batman. I mean, I can't believe it, because I'm not super into superhero movies. My kids are. But Batman does things that don't pay off for him. You know, we often talk about the economics of leadership are not great. Yeah. And he's like, no, I will suffer my reputation or how I'm seen for the good of others. And I think that's why, I honestly think that's why people put that movie, there's like two of the Batman movies on there as some of the best movies ever, not just superhero movies, but I think it's because there's this real sense of sacrifice and loss. Yeah. And that transcends the fact that he has a cool motorcycle and that there's this funky villain and all that kind of stuff. There's almost something truly lasting about the example there. And of course, we could use the example of Jesus, you know, and being crucified and dying. Of course, he rose from the dead, but there was no score, you know, there's no soundtrack in all these things. It's not quite like movies tend to make them out to be.
So, Pat, I might have asked you this question when we did Cowardly Lions episode a few months ago. I don't remember if I asked you or not, but I'm curious if you're listening to this and you're feeling the, oh man, I'm not a very courageous person and I'd like to have more courage. What do you do? Because I had partway through this conversation, I wrote down the idea of, well, the best way to find out if you can trust somebody is to trust them. Maybe the best way to find out if you have courage is to try it. But that isn't always the right answer. Saying something is not always the right answer. Doing more might bleed into bravado. So how do you coach a leader about this?
Okay, I think the first thing, and I'm sure this is something that comes from all personal development, is let people know you want that. In other words, say, I would like to become more courageous in the way I have conversations with people. I would like to be more courageous in the way I confront myself and see myself. I want to be more courageous in my willingness to stand up and say something that's unpopular when I think it's in the best interest of others, even if it might be at risk. Just saying that does two things. First of all, you've said it. I remember I learned in social psychology that if somebody stands up and says something out loud, they're much more likely to believe it. So get them to say that. I think that's why when we go to marriage, they don't go, okay, everybody, think in your mind. Do you say I do? You say it out loud. It's like, I do. Secondly, other people, when they heard you say that and they can see you're trying, they will encourage you. They will say, no, this, you said you wanted to be more courageous. Here's the opportunity to do that. So I think the first thing to do is tell the people around you that it's a goal of yours, which, and that alone takes courage. The other thing is ask people, what's the worst that could happen? Sometimes we do that worst case scenario analysis. And like, what's really going to happen? Do you think somebody's going to kill you? Do you really think you're going to lose your job if you say, I just have to disagree with this? And often people will go, yeah, I don't think that would happen. And then sometimes you have to say, and if that did, could you handle it? And more often than not, people go, you know, if that's what happened as a result of that, I would have to be okay. So play it out. Play out what might happen. That's one way, I think. What do you think?
And then as you're saying that, I'm imagining that happening and thinking, you know, gosh, when somebody takes the risk to, you know, jump off the 10-foot diving board to get in, the worst thing you can do is say, hey, you didn't point your toes very well, or, you know, you did it, but you could have done it a little bit better. What we need is people cheering for us saying, hey, thanks. First of all, headline, thanks for being courageous. Thanks for picking up the phone to confront me, to have the conversation. Thanks for having the willingness to look in the mirror. Thank you for saying that publicly. That meant a lot, because it's so vulnerable to have courage. And what happens is people end up editing our words and nitpicking the things we didn't do well, rather than coming alongside and breathing life to us for taking the step to have some.
Yeah.
Well, and I do think that this goes back to all the movies that we watch. Is like, when we talk about courage, you don't go straight into the burning building. That, like, it's not like, hey, you either have no courage or you run into the burning building. There's so many steps in between. The same person that ran into the burning building is the one who had these moments of courage in their life that built that muscle. And I think it's like, hey, it doesn't have to be a big, it doesn't have to be a theatrical amount of courage. It can be a, hey, I should probably call that person and tell them that the way that they came across was not ideal for them, or I don't think that's how they want to come across in that situation. Or, hey, you know, my family member's been in this relationship that I felt like is bad for them, and I haven't had the courage to have a difficult conversation. Those are not, you know, saving someone from railroad tracks or running into a burning building, but those are the stepping stones to more.
Yes. Gosh, I think that, and Cody, when you're doing that, when you're taking those baby steps, you're right. It doesn't have to be theatrical. It's like, I'm a little scared of gosh, amphibians, or what's a lizard? Reptile. I'm a little scared of reptiles. You should go wrestle alligators. You right. know, it's like everybody thinks it's like that extreme. The other thing is, in order to start doing that, just anticipate objections or put it out there. Like, so you're at Thanksgiving and there's a conversation going on at the table and you're going to, I've never stood up and said something. And you could say, hey, you guys, this is not easy for me to do but I got to say, this is how I feel about this. Hmm. Just saying that like letting it out a little bit, like anticipating objections is going to make it a little less scary. And then you can do that. Right. So I think that's a good thing. I'm sorry, my reptile comment. I'm trying to do a bunch of things at once. I had this thought. When I was in college, I remember I would be in the breezeway outside our dorm, and I would get into a big argument with people in the dorm. And it was I was advocating for something. We were kids, you know, college, advocating for something that was unpopular among college students at the time. They were saying something. I said, I don't agree with that. And we had this thing and it was difficult. I was definitely the only one saying it. And there might've been four or five people around me kind of yelling at me, you know, you're college students. And that's good to have that kind of dialogue. That's what we're supposed to have. I hope they still do that in college. I'm not sure they do. But then afterward, the housekeepers would come and they'd say, I was listening to your conversation and I totally agree with you. Or the some of my friends would say, hey, we thought that was great. And I remember at the time thinking, you know, it would have been okay if you'd have step next to me and said, we agree with him. So sometimes one of the things we can do too is somebody's courageous. All we have to do is say, good on him or good on her. I'm with her. I'm with him. Mm-hmm. So when we let somebody else do that and then we don't step up to make them not feel alone, sometimes we make it that much more difficult for that person to do it the next time. Something else to think about. Okay. Thank you for indulging us in the first conversation we've had about the three signs of courage. Now, we normally would do an unpaid advertisement right now, but well, I'm lacking a little bit of courage in that right now because we got a note from a listener, and I want to take this seriously, this cut to the core. And so we're a little bit bashful right now. Well, let me explain why. So here's the note. It said, hi, I had really enjoyed your podcasts until I listened to your comments about salad and even worse, celery. Celery is one of the most amazing foods in the world. It is the personification of E, enablement. If foods have a feeding genius, like working genius, then celery would be the poster food for enablement. I challenge you to name another food equally wonderful with both ranch dressing and peanut butter, but not at the same time. I am fairly certain all of our founding fathers enjoyed celery. I encourage you to issue a retraction to your slander of celery as soon as possible. Thank you, George. P.S. If you can extol the virtues of cream soda, how on earth can you not enjoy celery? And this just rocked my world. And so I just want to say, George, Cody, what do you want to say about celery?
I'd like to take this opportunity to double down on my thoughts on celery. I think when the virtues of the food is a vehicle for another food that actually tastes good, like peanut butter, it's again, I mean, I'm not here for it, but I actually agree with the cream soda comment. So I will agree with George on that.
I think that was one of the best letters we've ever received. George totally gets the podcast, his reference about the founding fathers. George, good on you, but we stand by our view on celery anyway. All right. Thanks for joining us. Have courage, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.